Hello everyone and welcome to a new Impact Pool podcast. And today our guest is Deepa Pindolia. Welcome, Deepa.
Thank you.
Deepa is currently a global health consultant at the World Health Organization, WHO. And I think it's fair to say that you've got lots of experience in the strategically planning, managing and executing of malaria and neglected tropical diseases, as you call them, programs in many, many countries, which I think is a super fascinating topic and least to say a very important thing for lots of people around the globe. So I'm really excited that you're willing to talk to us here at Impact Pool about what you do. Maybe to start off with, can you maybe briefly tell us a bit about your road in life, what you've been doing up to now, and maybe also what were important milestones for you?
Yeah, that would be great. Great place to start. I think the biggest milestone for me, like might be for most teenagers, was getting into university. I spent my childhood growing up in Nairobi. That's where I went to school. And I was really fortunate to be part of a family that valued education. Yeah. And so getting into university in the UK was a big milestone for me. And I, in my years at school, I was quite good at numbers. And this was a time when the banking industry was flourishing, and you know, it just sort of seemed like if you were good at numbers, then that was a great career to pursue. And so that's what I went to university for. And then I would say my second milestone was when I learned about the world of public health, and when I was convinced about this being the path that I wanted to pursue. Mm-hmm. And now you might ask, how did you go from banking to public health? It's a big switch in many ways. And I think this is during my undergraduate when, about halfway through, I would say, I just wasn't connecting to the world of banking. Right. mean, I was good at it. I would have been good at it, I think, if I'd pursued it. But it just wasn't clicking for me. I didn't feel that that is what I wanted to do with my time, with my life.
Yes.
And so I started to think about, you know, how else could I apply the skills that I had or that I was building in statistics, mathematics, to problems that really mattered to me. Unfortunately, the degree programs, or at least the program that I was in at the university that I was at, wasn't very flexible in sort of allowing you to switch majors and things like that. Yeah. And so I took the opportunity that I could and started taking some classes in psychology and demography and just to see, sort of expand my horizon, so to say, and finished off my degree. But then I still hadn't sort of gotten a lot of clarity about what I wanted to do with my career. And so I decided to take a gap year, pursue some internships. And this is where I learned about the world of public health and how I could actually apply a lot of the skills that I had, the interests that I had in statistics to problems of the world of public health.
Yeah.
And I think this was a big milestone for me because I got a lot of clarity on what I could pursue as a, you know, a longer term career. The third milestone, perhaps I would say like anybody who has a PhD would say, would be finishing my dissertation.
So yeah.
This is a long and interesting, fulfilling and frustrating journey.
Painful journey? No. Great journey.
You can use all the words, to describe this experience. But it was, honestly, it was worth it because it actually took me to a job, an organization that I spent almost 10 years working for. So this was at the Clinton Health Access Initiative. I started off in the US just for a year or so, but then very quickly moved to do program work in Africa.
Right.
And I was happy to be back in Africa where my family was at, where my heart was at, and a lot of the work that I was doing was there. And so, yeah, this was really nice to be back in my home country and doing work that was meaningful. Yeah, and then in more recent years, I would say maybe the last milestone that I might talk about is having the confidence to take a break from a career that was part of my identity that I really truly loved. But life happened. I had a young son, I moved countries, and I had different priorities. And so having the confidence to take this break, I would say, was the most recent milestone for me. Yeah, and since then, I mean, I actually just started back in the workplace a couple months ago. And like you mentioned, I'm doing some consulting work now for the World Health Organization. I'm still on a part-time basis to ease into things. But yeah, happy to be back in global health.
Hey, you mentioned your internship. I just want to maybe dive into that for a second, if that's okay for you. If I understand correctly, you started your career as a research intern at UN Habitat, is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. What was the importance of this internship? I mean, how has it helped you in your career? You alluded to that a little bit, but I'm just curious to learn a little bit more also for people, doing internships. It might be interesting to know.
So this is the first internship that I did after I finished my undergraduate. And I think there are two things that I got from this internship. The first was exposure. I learned about how someone with a background in statistics or mathematics can apply the skill set, to a variety of different problems in development, in health, in social justice, and so on and so forth. And this exposure was really inspiring to me. And also made me realize there's a lot of things out in the world that I don't know. So that was, I think, one of the things. And then the other thing that I didn't really appreciate before was the value of cross-functional teams and diversity in solving problems. In the university that I went to, it was a small university, primarily like a business school. A lot of the students that were there to pursue a degree in banking. And so it was very sort of, I mean, though there was diversity there is everywhere. I never really appreciated that people with different skill sets, people with different educational backgrounds and training, can all still be working towards solving a similar problem. And I think the UN is a really interesting place to show this type of thing to a young person who hasn't.
Well, that's actually something that I always really enjoyed working in international organizations is that element of diversity and the different angles that people bring, truly different angles that they bring to the work.
Yeah, lots of creative problem solving, new perspectives that you had no idea about, that you would have never come up with yourself.
Do you still find that's working that way, or has that changed over time? No.
That's a great question. Yes, I think so. I think, I mean, so my experiences after that, where the UN is now at WHO, which is the closest, I would say, I've been back at the UN, and I find it to be similar.
Good. Hey, can you just share a little bit more about your journey in terms of how you got involved in supporting malaria and neglected tropical disease programs in Africa? I really know very little about it, so I'm...
Yes. So I think the place I'd like to start, actually, is when I was doing my master's and learning about the world's biggest problems in global health. And the thing that really sticks with me is that malaria entities kill almost, like collectively, kill almost a million people around the world every year. Like, think about the number, a million people, and all these deaths are preventable. We can do something about it. And so, I mean, for me, it was like a no-brainer. It's like, I want to be there. I want to be involved. I want to be able to do my part. And then, you know, with sort of having this exposure and learning about the world's biggest sort of public health issues and global health challenges and so on, I got an opportunity to research a topic as part of a PhD that seemed very relevant to the problems in the malaria and NTD space, which was looking at how globalization, population movements are affecting disease patterns, are affecting how malaria is spread, how it and therefore how it is managed by countries. And having always wanted to work on things that are useful, this topic was quite interesting to me. And so that's what I pursued as my PhD research topic. And luckily enough, as soon as I graduated, I had an opportunity to work for the Clinton Health Access Initiative, for CHAI, where the team was just in the process of getting some funding to work on exactly this. Trying to support countries in sub-Saharan Africa manage their biggest challenges with malaria, and how strengthening of health systems would lead to sustainable impact. And so I think maybe this is a nice time to talk a little bit about what CHAI does. So CHAI is like a global health NGO. It's very mission focused on saving lives. And of course, this was like very, like this connected with me quite a bit, because like the mission was really important to me. And the organization was working with countries, sort of backstop government programs to implement more efficient and impactful programs. And they had presence in over 30 countries. And so me having an opportunity to work with them, like starting off in East Africa and then quickly expanding to the other countries that they were supporting in sub-Saharan Africa, was just a perfect fit. And a lot of the work initially for me was focused on malaria. And so my role obviously changed a little bit over time, but primarily it was a technical role where I worked with different CHAI teams and also different government teams across all these countries to bring methods and approaches on how countries could build and evaluate their data systems to ultimately make more informed decisions and have more, you know, evidence-based policies. And so, yeah, that's sort of my pathway to how I got to the field of programming for malaria and NTDs.
Hey, and you've been working in that field for quite some time. Maybe a funny question. Well, although it seems maybe like a superficial question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What in this did you or do you find most rewarding? And I'm asking because you said, okay, you know, I came from the banking world and it's a strange change to go to not-for-profit, do something completely different. Although, on a side note, I know somebody who was actually in the banking world in London that became a film director. That also happens. But again, so going from that world, you clearly had your motivations, but what do you find most rewarding then if you look at it?
Yeah. So one of the things that that motivated me, I would say, on a day-to-day basis, was the opportunity to be solving problems creatively. For me, actually, maybe I will share a quote that I think about often. It's from Albert Einstein. It says, "Creativity is to see what others see, but to think what no one else ever thought." And this for me is fun. Honestly, I love thinking about problems and coming up with new solutions. And in the world of global health, and like many other places, there was never an absence of problems. And I find it motivating and exciting to be part of a machine that's creating new solutions to problems that matter.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I actually would like to share is that in the role that I was in, because I was supporting across multiple countries, across multiple partners, different types of people with different backgrounds, different interests, different jobs, I had this opportunity to mentor. I had an opportunity to help empower and enable people. And I think on a day-to-day basis, this was very rewarding for me. I did not realize it whilst I was doing it. At least for the first few years, I did not realize it. But afterwards, it really came out so clear to me that this was something that I would want to keep in whatever job I do, actually, not just the work that I was doing up until then.
Yeah. Nice. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Hey, you mentioned a little bit the cross-country programs. There's a lot of that work in what you do. Can you zoom in on that a little bit? How would you describe it? Also from the perspective, if people want to go into these fields and people that work in the field, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sure. So like I mentioned a little earlier, a lot of the work that I did or have done in the global health world was as part of the Clinton Health Access Initiative.
Yeah.
And like other big or maybe medium-sized organizations that have similar mandates, you know, are global health NGOs supporting multiple countries. The way it's more or less set up is that it's like a matrix. So there are programs in multiple countries. Each country is focusing on their country. And then you have this like regional or global team that would be then supporting more than one country at a time.
Yeah.
The role that I had was to support across the different programs and focusing on one technical niche or technical area. Now, each of those country programs have their own mandate. Obviously, every country has the best sense of what is the problem in that country, what is going to work as a potential solution. And so as an outsider, so to say, what value can I bring? I don't want to just sort of step into someone else's space and kind of take it start to end. That solution is never going to be useful, or at least not sustainable.
Or not accepted, perhaps.
Yeah. Yes. And so I think one of the biggest things is to appreciate that, like, the context is best understood by the people who are there on a day-to-day basis. And so my role was to partner with the country program to think through the problem and then to see how I can add value into the problem-solving process. And for me, like I mentioned, the area of focus was on helping build better data systems and taking more data-informed decisions in terms of program planning, implementation, and so on. And so I think this is an important aspect to focus on, is to appreciate that the people on the ground they understand what they need. Yeah. They understand what the problem is. And if we're working, or if I am working as somebody on a cross-country team or cross-functional team, the starting place is really the country program and the country team. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, do you feel like what you mentioned earlier, actually as one of the things you learned from your internship, where it was more team focused, admittedly. So this understanding of, or working with different inputs from different cultures and different backgrounds, how does that work for you?
Yeah, so when you have a certain problem that you're working on, mm-hmm. Having the perspective of people that have different training,
right.
I think that being inclusive of this diversity is more likely to take you to success, mm-hmm. to get a problem that is going to be relevant, because it's going to be representative of a lot of perspectives. And so you can get different perspectives from different cultures, from different backgrounds. You can also get different perspectives from people that have different types of training or even trained in the same subjects, but in different countries or a different time periods. So that's sort of what I mean. I hope I clarified.
No, thank you. Thank you. Something different. You mentioned it in the introduction. I would like to talk about the break you took to being a full-time parent.
Yeah, one of the hardest decisions I've ever made.
Yes, you said so. So I'm curious to learn, why was it the hardest decision you ever made? And also maybe going back to now, at the moment for WHO, but just going generally back to working.
Yes, I would love to speak about this, actually. It came with a lot of mixed feelings. When I decided to leave the workplace, actually, I was what many people would say at the peak of my career. I had just gotten to where I had been working to get to for almost a decade or longer.
Yeah.
I'd had the opportunity to start my own program, to build my own team, secure funding to support 7 countries. It was great. And so a lot of people, including myself, asked, why leave now? And it was a great question. of course, it wasn't an easy one. And I was scared to lose all of it if I took a break. But at the same time, priorities were different. I had a young child and he needed me and I wanted to be there for him. We also moved countries as a young family. And I felt that at that point in time, it was my responsibility to reprioritize and refocus. And not just a responsibility, actually, it was something that was really close to my heart. I did want to do it. And so it was like a fight with myself, because you can want 2 things at the same time. But in hindsight, 2020, I think it was a good decision, because it obviously not only gave me time to spend with my family and manage a country move and so on, it gave me the opportunity to really reflect and learn about myself and my career and my life choices and how I was spending my time and so on. It also gave me time to nurture other interests. Spent a lot of time cooking, creating recipes. I spent a little bit of time learning a language. That part wasn't that great.
Which language was that?
German.
Ah, yes. Well, it's not easy.
Yeah, not so easy. And actually, now that I've been back at work, I mean, it's been a slow transition. I've only been back at work for 2 months and I started part-time.
Mm.
I think it's been overall positive. Obviously, it's an adjustment. I have to kind of reorganize my life and make sure I have some structure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think having that opportunity to reflect on the years before,
yeah.
I'm now being a lot more purposeful on what I spend my time on and not just sort of being busy, which I think I did for many years in the early part of my career.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think having that break just really gave me time to reflect on spending your time on what matters. And I think I'm now very actively trying to apply that in the work that I do professionally.
Yeah. I think that's actually really fascinating in the sense that taking a step back and seeing what you really want to do. And in your case, okay, this was due to maternity break, but possibly good for many people, whichever gender, to take a break and have a look at, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would recommend it for anybody who can do it. It obviously comes with sacrifice, but I think the sacrifice is worth it.
You said, you know, it was scary in a way. I mean, obviously, if I may say so, I think from my own perspective, if you've got a kid, there is a certain motivation to do that, which might potentially make it a little easier. Well, easier is not the word, but you're more driven to do it potentially than just taking a break if there's no such incentive. But then again, so you said it was really scary. So what made you think, yes, I really need to do this? Because you took the decision to do it, even though you thought like, oh my God, I'm at the peak of my career. This is maybe not such a good idea.
Yes. And so I think it's what you mentioned. When you have a kid, it in some ways it is easier. I was also sort of, it was also very clear to me that my son needed me and that I wanted to be there for him. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately that took priority. And so I faced my fears.
And going back, and how is it going back into the work now? So you said there's more focus. Can you elaborate a bit more on what you meant?
Yes. So obviously now going back to work, and with a young child, maybe you can relate to that. There are only so many hours that I have in a day. And unlike before, when it was just me and I could just spend 24 hours a day, sacrifice all the sleep to do whatever I wanted, there are only so many hours a day where I need to get my work done.
Yeah.
And so I am purposeful, or at least I try to be very purposeful on what it is I need to achieve within that short period of time. And so I focus on tasks that are, you know, the most impactful, focus on tasks that are urgent, focus on tasks that where I can add the most value. I like to think about the team that I work within often and what is my role within that team, where I can add the most value. And this helps me, I think, deprioritize the you know, quote unquote busy work. Sometimes I think that there is a tendency to just do a lot of things and that makes you feel like you're working. But that's not necessarily the case.
What would you consider to be your key personal values or motivators and how do they determine what you do?
Yeah. So I think this is fluid. It probably changes on a day-to-day basis.
Okay, I was going to say, sure, over years. Okay, on a day-to-day basis. Okay.
Yeah.
Tell me.
There are a few things that remain constant, I think. And I think one of the things for me is the people around me. My friends and family, you know, their kind of positive energy, their dedication to their work, their generosity, this really inspires me and motivates me in everything that I do. Mm-hmm. And I think this applies to all aspects of my life. And I think a couple other things, and these I mentioned a little earlier, one of them is working on things that matter and where I feel I can empower and enable people to do what they want to do.
Yeah.
And this is a lot of the reason why I think I got why it was so rewarding for me to have a career in global health is because there are endless opportunities to do this on a day-to-day basis. And so the impact of the work is a big driving factor.
Yeah.
And lastly, I think, you know, I like to think of myself as a creative person, and I know that it's good for me if I'm doing creative things on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
And so, having the opportunity to problem solve in a way that I could, you know, I can approach it in any way I want. This is something that interests me that motivates me quite a bit.
Thanks. Yeah, creativity, yeah. It's important. And interestingly enough, I mean, over the years that from my job in HR that I've been attending all sorts of congresses and things, you can also see that this whole element of creativity is key, really, right? To development and what we do.
Yes.
And will be more and more essential also, I believe, apart from it being a real motivator for people, and it's a beautiful thing. Lots of things will be automated, but creativity is what's going to set us aside, I think.
And perhaps having more of the mechanical, so to say, things automated leaves more room for creativity, more time, more space.
Exactly. But yes. No, that's what I think. Yeah. So. Well, we're nearing the end to one of my standard questions for those of you who've been listening to other podcasts. If you could share a wish right now for what you would like to bring to the world, what would that be?
It's a good one. Can I give you two? They're kind of related. Okay.
So some people gave me three, I think. So. Yeah, sorry. Right, go ahead. Yes.
Yeah. So I think the first is equal opportunity. I really feel that it is unacceptable that we live in a world where, you know, where you're born or what you do or what you're good at determines like the opportunity that you get.
Yeah.
And I think the second one, and I think maybe it's part of the first, is a life of purpose, which I think is like, you know, a combination of education, experience, self-reflection, encouragement from people around you. Because I think a life of purpose is where people are most fulfilled and therefore most successful. So perhaps that's two, but maybe it's one.
No, I feel it's two. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, no. Sadly, there's still a lot of work to be done in terms of equal opportunity. Wow, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Merlin.
I really, really enjoyed it. And it gave me a lot of interesting insights into a world that I actually don't know that well.
It's been fun for me too. Thanks so much.
Thank you for that. glad to hear that. That's really good. Thank you so much. And thank you everyone for listening. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, and we'll be back again with a new podcast. Bye everyone.